Hey friends, and welcome back to Health Simple Radio. This is Kyle Reedhead, host of the podcast, episode number 68. And today I am joined with a returning guest, Todd White. Todd White is the founder of Dry Farm Wines, and we're going to be talking all about alcohol, keto, weight loss, and of course, wine. Now, if you heard the podcast previously with Todd, it was episode number 38, and we talked about the truth about wine and how to choose the healthiest bottle. It was a mind-blowing episode. We talked some of this information again here in this one. It is insane what's going on in the wine industry and in the alcohol industry, but I wanted to bring him back on and really apply this wine and all wines really to those who are trying to lose weight or trying to remain in a state of ketosis. Todd has been on the ketogenic diet for a number of years, and he's been using this wine. The wine that they make from Dry Farm Wines is one of the only, to my knowledge anyway, one of the only truly all-natural, organic, sugar-free, low-alcohol, ketogenic, or paleo-type wines in the world. I mean, there's some others, but this is one of the only main distributors that you can actually get your hands on a regular basis. I've had this wine and I absolutely love it. I highly recommend it. If you are on keto and you enjoy wine, then this wine needs to be in your bar or wherever else you put your wine. And the good news is right now you can actually get a bottle of this, if this is your first order, for just a penny. One penny for a full bottle of sugar-free, all-natural, organic, low alcohol wine. It's pretty amazing. So you just got to go to dryfarmwines.com/healthsimple or click the link in the show notes and you can grab yourself a bottle of this wine. It's for US based customers only and they deliver it right to your door. You can get different types of wine, boxes of wine. It's awesome. Regardless, if you're a wine drinker, even if you're outside of the US, check this episode out because there is going to be some really interesting information that you need to know. All right, guys, without further ado, enjoy this episode. Hey, guys, and welcome back to Health Simple Radio. Today, I'm joined with a guest that I've had on previously, actually, and that's Todd White. He is the founder of Dry Farm Wines. And we're going to talk today all about alcohol, keto, and weight loss, a common question that I hear with those in the weight loss world and in the keto world. Todd, let's start with your keto journey. How long have you been on keto for?
Just over 5 years. Wow. So I've been low carb for much longer than that, experimenting with a ketogenic diet back to the 1980s with the Atkins diet. That was long before anybody really, you know, before the ketogenic movement started. And I was kind of on the front side of it. When I became ketogenic 5 years ago, you know, it was really just biohackers who were experimenting with it outside of some therapeutic uses. It didn't become really what I'd say mainstream until 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, and started to come up onto, you know, now it's, you know, significant search term on Google, and you know, it's a huge revolution. But at the time, it was, you know, it was quite unknown. So That's actually how I got in the wine business as well, because once I became ketogenic, I just couldn't drink traditional wines anymore. Couldn't drink standard wines. So that's how I got in the natural wine business, actually.
Cool. So was it a weight loss thing? Was it more just cognitive benefits? You just wanted to perform at a higher level, or what was it that kind of started that keto idea for you?
Well, like most people, or many people, I started the ketogenic diet to break through a weight loss plateau of what I thought was like the last 5 or 7 pounds or something. I ended up losing like 18 pounds. And then I've reached this sort of natural set point that I'd rarely deviate from unless I go on an extended fast or I have some really intentional calorie restriction protocol that I might be experimenting with, but I weigh exactly the same thing every day, more or less. And so for a long time. But I mean, I like to describe the ketogenic diet as weight loss as a side effect, but not really the reason to follow the protocol. And you know, the reason to follow the protocol from my perspective is from enhanced cognitive performance. And like I had a huge, Well, there were two things. When I began the ketogenic diet in earnest and like with a high level of compliance, I also began a very serious personal meditation practice. Mm. So they both happened at the same time. So I'm not sure some of the cognitive benefits probably are associated with the cofactor of meditation. So I had a huge increase in short-term memory. And I don't know if that was from meditation or I don't know if it was from ketogenic diet or a combination of the both. But, you know, so they're for me, the cognitive benefits are pretty profound. You know, I've been experimenting with a lot of fasting protocols, and I'm currently and have been for nearly 3 years now, only eating once per day. I eat at night around 6 o'clock. For about 2 years prior to that, you know, I was on the Lean Gains or the 16-8 protocol for intermittent fasting. And I felt when I went to a once-a-day meal that it was a huge advancement in my overall wellness and a huge advancement in just my life, right? I have more time, a lot less decision fatigue. You know, just breaking in the middle of the day to eat is just highly distracting. And also when you eat, after you've not eaten for a while, I've eaten lunch probably 3 or 4 times in the last few years for social reasons, right? Because it's just too complicated for me to explain either because of language barriers. I travel a lot internationally. Or, you know, just going to take just a shitload of ribbing over it. You know, so it's just like, so it's just easier for some people just to go along with them, right?
Yeah.
Some people just not going to let you off the hook. So I've eaten 3 or 4 or 5 times in the last few years lunch, and it's a real downer, man. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of effort to digest a meal, right? And so for me, it just works better to eat once a day. I lost an additional 5 pounds or so when I went to a once-a-day feeding.
Okay.
And a common question I get on that is people ask, well, how many calories do you eat? And I'm like, well, I don't even know. I imagine somewhere around 1,200 or 1,500
plus maybe,
well, that includes wine, right? Mm, I usually drink a bottle of wine. So, you know, but actually, you know, people think, oh, well, this is not healthy for you. I'm like, well, actually I'm more concerned with eating fewer calories, not more calories. You know, I mean, we don't really know when we look at the benefits of fasting and intermittent fasting or the ketogenic diet. There's a number of cofactors here. We don't know if it's calorie restriction because most people on a keto diet actually probably eat fewer calories because they just eat less food, you know, because you're just not as hungry. And fat is so satiating. While it's more calorie dense, it's also a lot more satiating, right? So I probably eat less calories than when I ate a standard diet. And that's a good thing from my perspective. We know that calorie restriction is one of the few known methods to extend lifespan in organisms. But we don't know that it works in humans because there's no way to do control group studies on it. But we do know in simple organisms like yeast and worms that it's been shown to have a fairly significant impact on the extension of lifespan.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when I think about longevity and the extension of lifespan, I think more about extending health span, right? And than lifespan. So for me, and I'm a lot older than most of you, for me, it's, you know, it's about extending health span. And when I look at the likelihood, when I look at the likely causes of an interruption to my health span, cancer is the leading. I'm not going to get cardiovascular disease. I know that for sure, right? Because I've had heart scans and body scans. I know I'm not going to have blockage. I know I'm not going to have cardiovascular disease. So the second biggest risk to that would be cancer, right? One of two people will develop cancer at some point in their life, and so, or malignancy, I should say. And so, you know, fasting and the ketogenic diet both have been shown to be preventative for cancer, and in some cases, actually used to treat cancer in conjunction with, you know, traditional therapies. But so I'm really trying to avoid cancer, because I don't think I'm at risk for cardiovascular disease. I'm trying to avoid accidents and cancer, which is the reason I gave up all high-risk sports when I turned 50, which was almost 9 years ago. And so, you know, I gave up all of the sports that I was engaged in, like snow skiing, water skiing, mountain biking, so on and so forth, just, you know, to try and decrease my incident of injury or, you know, or death.
Yeah. You know, I like that you take the health first approach. It's not about weight loss. Like you said, it's a side effect. And that's what I try to teach when I, you know, when I'm teaching about weight loss in general, is like, focus on your health and the weight is just going to come off naturally. And I think that's what you kind of saw with the ketogenic diet, with fasting for you, which I think is great. One thing, when you say restricting calories is really healthy, it's really good, the best thing for longevity. One thing I want to point out is it's not necessarily, that doesn't mean starving yourself. I mean, if you're eating a crappy diet and you just decide to eat 300 calories a day, that's not a good idea. But on a keto diet, if you're still providing the right nutrients for yourself, you're automatically just going to eat less. And that is the way to do it, because then it's not this huge stress on your body and going to cause a lot of other issues. And hopefully that's what you mean in the way that you presented that.
Yeah, of course. And in my case, and I don't know if this is a result of aging or if it, you know, is just a result of being more dialed into my nutritional program, but I generally feel better eating lighter, less protein and more plant food. I'm not a vegetarian. I'm not vegan. I eat protein on a regular basis, primarily in the way of grass-fed beef or fish. Sometimes chicken, not often, but mainly beef and fish. But I find I feel better if I eat more fish and less beef, and just more plant food in general, just a lighter density of food, which is sort of the same approach we have with wine. We drink lower alcohol, lighter, fresher wines, right? And we have a much better experience with it.
Absolutely. So this is a good transition to the topic that I want to talk about, which is alcohol and wine. You say that you're in it for the, you know, for longevity and improved lifespan and health span, et cetera. But then you said, you mentioned, I think, a bottle of wine a day. Is that how much wine you're drinking?
I do drink a bottle a day, but this is low alcohol wine, typically between 10 and 11% alcohol.
Okay.
And like traditional American wines now are tipping right at 15% on average. So alcohol has gone up in wine over the last 30 years, steadily year after year after year, because the wine industry likes alcohol. And here's what I would tell you about alcohol. And when, you know, let's forget about wine for a second, but when we think about alcohol, we think about our relationship with alcohol, you know, which is the reason that I only drink low alcohol wines, right? I don't, any lower than beverages, commercially available beverages of choice, lower than wine are going to be cider and beer. Mm. I don't drink beer for two reasons. One, I'm not interested in the gluten. Now, they're gluten-free beers, but then there's the second bigger problem with beer, which it contains a very specific sugar called maltose sugar, which metabolizes super fast into fat, right? And so much faster than fructose, which is also very fast, and much, much faster than glucose, right? And so maltose sugar, which is the cause of the beer gut, right? Because it converts very quickly to belly fat, right at the liver. And so that's the reason I don't drink beer. I rather like the taste of it. I just think it's unhealthy. Mm. And then ciders, which are also lower in alcohol and typically made from apples. Ciders are delicious, except that they commonly contain high levels of sugar. You can get sugar-free ciders, but the problem with them is that they taste very austere. They don't taste very good, right? And so that leaves me with low alcohol wines that are also sugar-free. Right. We do lab testing on all of our wines. We only sell wines that are sugar free. I think sugar is the most addictive and widely abused drug on the planet. Right. And so I really try to stay sugar free and put a lot of effort into that because I believe sugar is a very dangerous drug as well. But alcohol is a very dangerous neurotoxin and a destructive drug. And so when we think about drinking, and we think about drinking regularly, as I do, and our business is really designed to assist regular drinkers, people who drink wine daily, right? We're a wine club, and we want to help the people who need the help the most. And that's the people who are drinking the most often. Whether you choose to drink or not, if you do choose to drink, then I think you should think about what you're drinking, how you're drinking it, who you're drinking it with, right? Which is a big part of the alcohol experience. And to think about, for much of my adult life, I had a rather tenuous relationship with alcohol, right? I was drinking spirits and raging through my 30s and 40s. And, you know, and so it's like this, we owe it to ourselves, particularly for regular drinkers, we owe it to ourselves to have a self, to have a conversation with self about what and how much and how often we drink. Like, I don't drink during the daytime, as an example. I'm probably the only guy in the wine business that doesn't drink during the daytime, but I don't think it's healthy. It doesn't serve my life, right? And so that's how I think about, I don't drink without eating, right? It doesn't serve me to drink without eating, right? Especially since I'm fasted all day. So those are the decisions that we have to think about our relationship with alcohol, right? And are we using alcohol to tap in to a lighter and higher place of creative expression and spirituality? Or are we using alcohol to check out of a miserable, unexamined life, as many people do, right? And so I think we all owe it to ourselves to think about our relationship with alcohol. And so that's how, why I got on this path of looking for lower alcohol wines, which is how I discovered the natural wine movement and the lower alcohol wines that are being produced in Europe. And so that was the beginning of this journey. Long before it was a business, I was looking for a healthier way to drink. So I was trying to scratch my own itch, right? So that's sort of how I got here.
Interesting. So you're looking for the lower alcohol percent. What can you explain a little bit about what the mechanism is? Like, what happens with when we consume alcohol? Why is this bad for those who are, let's say, trying to lose weight or trying to stay healthy, et cetera, if we're drinking high amounts of alcohol?
Well, I mean, drinking alcohol itself, I mean, I don't know any, alcohol itself won't take you out of ketosis, right? And so the drink of choice for people in the keto, you know, that, I mean, other than our wines, I mean, we're known as the keto and the paleo wine, but other than our wines, the drink of choice people in the community, and we're very present in the community, as you're well aware of. I mean, we're the largest natural wine buyer and seller in the world, and we're specifically targeted at people who are interested in paleo and keto. But as you know, tequila is very often the drink of choice for people in the paleo or keto movement. So alcohol itself doesn't, I don't drink spirits. I've never experimented with it, but reportedly, you know, distilled spirits won't take you out of ketosis. Now, what will take you out of ketosis is what you mix it with, right? So if there's sugar or carbs in what's being mixed with, but from my understanding, and again, I've never experimented personally with it. I have experimented widely with drinking our wines and testing my blood glucose and ketone levels or BHB through my blood, you know, doing finger pricks. And so I don't, in terms of weight loss, I think the primary risk to somebody who's trying to lose weight and drinking too much is then losing control of their faculties and eating too much, right? And so I think the biggest risk to weight loss in terms of alcohol is actually losing your faculties and impairing your judgment. See, alcohol is a domino drug. And what I mean by that is that more you drink, the more you're likely to drink. So while I drink a bottle of wine, I'm drinking a bottle of low alcohol wine, right? But the high, which is the reason I don't recommend that people drink tequila, is because it's 45% alcohol. And most people don't have a drink, they have several, right? And so the underlying amount of alcohol in the beverage matters, because most people just don't have a glass of wine. I don't know anybody who has a glass of wine, personally, right? I mean, I know people who have several glasses of wine. I know people who have a bottle of wine. I don't know anybody who has a glass of wine, right? And I'm sure they're out there, but that's not how I drink, and it's not how most people I know drink, and it's certainly not how our members drink, right? And so, I mean, because we have some people that get up to 5 cases a month. They drink a bottle a day, right? And then plus what they share with their friends and so on and so forth. That's a regular, serious wine drinker, right? And then we have people who get 6 bottles every 2 months, right? Or once a quarter. Those are not people who are drinking. Those people may be drinking a glass a day, right? Or every few days. So anyway, I think it's really important if you're going to drink and if you're going to consume alcohol that you make the right choices. As it relates to weight loss or certainly ketosis, ethyl alcohol, from my understanding, will not take you out of ketosis. From I'm getting that anecdotally reported from my friends who drink spirits and do blood testing, right? Mm. Can drink moderate amounts of tequila and not come out of ketosis. I can drink a bottle of wine. It has no impact on either my glucose levels or my ketone production. For me personally, I've done, and other people like Dominic D'Agostino, who's probably the best known ketogenic researcher in the United States, has also done independent blood testing with our wines, mm-hmm. and has posted many times on social the same outcome for him. And he also drinks dry farm wines, right? I mean, he's a wine drinker. He likes drinking wine, but he's also extremely committed to a ketogenic lifestyle.
Well, I think this brings up some good news for the listeners is that you can still have alcohol and continue to lose weight, which is honestly one of the most common questions that I get. But here's the thing. You can't just drink any wine. And I know this is an area that you love to talk about, and we've done a podcast kind of on this, and I want to dive back into that. As you said, I mean, tequila doesn't take you out of ketosis unless you're mixing it with Coca-Cola or something with some sugar. Beer is definitely going to kick you out of ketosis, depending on the kind that you're going to have. Wine, it depends on the wine that you're going to get. Like you said, dry farm wines, they make a sugar-free, low-alcohol wine. But most wines, if not every other wine out there, is not like that. Can you kind of talk about the difference between your wine and really every other wine that you're going to see in the market?
Yeah, so there's two types of wine in the market, and I'm going to share some dirty, dark secrets of the wine business, right? So there's two types of wine in the market. There's conventional wines, and that represents 99.9% of all wines you see on the store shelf. And then there are natural wines, and natural wines represent less than 0.1% of all the wines in the market. So they're quite rare. They're hard to find, which is why people... one of the reasons people buy them from us. Now we take the bar of natural wine and we raise it even higher. So it's not, we're just not selling natural wines, but we then do independent lab testing and we have quantifications that are much higher than just natural. I'll explain to you what those are. But what a conventional wine is, in the United States, there are 76 additives approved by the FDA for the use in winemaking. Now, consumers know nothing about these additives, and I would add that some of them are okay, some of them we don't know too much about, and 4 of them are toxic, right? And so, and we don't know whether they're in your wine or not. It's just a roll of the dice because the wine industry has spent tens of millions of dollars in lobby money to keep wine bottles from having contents labels on them. So there's no contents label or nutritional information to tell you whether there's sugar in it or not, as an example. There's no nutritional information and no contents label on a bottle of wine. And that's not an accident. The wine industry has spent tens of millions of dollars in lobby money in Washington, D.C. to keep contents labeling off of wine. So 76 additives, you don't know which ones, if any or all, or what's in your wine. Because the wine companies don't want you to know what's in it. Now, there's another thing about the wine industry. The same thing that's happened in our food supply has also happened in the wine supply. There's been massive corporate consolidation driven by money and greed, right? And so 52% of all the wines manufactured in the United States are made by just 3 giant conglomerates. The top 30 companies in the United States make over 70% of the wines manufactured. So Now, these three giant conglomerates, these people are really, really smart running these multi-billion-dollar marketing organizations. Now, why don't you know this? Because they hide behind tens of thousands of brands and labels. Because what they want you to think is that you're drinking from a farmhouse or a chateau, right? Mm-hmm. Some cute story. When in fact, you're drinking from massive wine manufacturing facilities and factories in Central California, right? They're just getting put in a bunch of different bottles and labels. These are just the facts. All this is verifiable through a simple Google search. You want to know about the 76 additives? You go and you type wine additives approved by the FDA. You will see the list. Now, they're pretty clever. So let's take dimethyl dicarbonate, right? This is DMDC, right? That's how it's shown as the additive. What they don't tell you is that it's marketed under the brand name Valkyrin, right? And it's very toxic. In fact, when it's applied in the winery by a specially licensed contractor who comes in hazmat suits, right? No one else can be in the winery when this additive is applied. It is applied to correct the most common bacterial fault in wine called Brettanomyces, right? If you drank the wine within 24 hours after application, you would likely die from. So now the government allows for up to 200 parts per million of this trace chemical to remain in the wine, right? Even as toxic as it is, most of it dissipates into carbon dioxide and methanol. Now, methanol is more toxic than ethanol, right? So even though most of it dissipates into another form of toxin, right? So this, nobody knows about, this is all public, but the wine industry has managed to keep it secret. You know, another toxin is copper sulfate, right? So this is also used to treat bacterial faults in wine. So you've got these four toxins that are additives, and then you've got some things we don't know too much about, and then we've got a bunch of stuff that's quite natural, like egg whites or clay that are used for fining. So, you know, not all of the 76 additives are toxic. The problem is you don't know what's in your wine that you're drinking unless you're drinking an additive-free natural wine, right? The other problem with commercial wines is that they are fermented with genetically modified lab-grown commercial yeast. Now, the reason that's important is because natural wines are fermented with wild native yeast that are indigenous to the vineyard where the grapes are grown. All wine grapes in the world have yeast on the skin of the berry at the time of harvest. All wine grapes. It's collected naturally through the air. The problem with this yeast, this native natural yeast, the problem with it is it's very temperamental and very difficult to work with. And you can't make wine in very large volumes using it. And so what happens is the winemaker uses sulfur dioxide to kill the native yeast and then inoculates it with this lab-grown genetically modified commercial yeast. So there's a few other reasons other than just wine volume and the difficulty of working with the yeast. These commercial yeasts will withstand a much higher alcohol environment. So high alcohol will kill a native yeast, right? Because it's just not natural in nature to make alcohol at that level in wine, in a fermented fruit. So any fruit will ferment if it comes in contact with yeast. So if you take a cluster of grapes and you just tossed it into a bucket, it will begin to ferment as long as the temperature is high enough. You know, to activate the yeast, it will begin fermentation right there in the bucket. You don't have to do a thing, right? Well, other fruits will also ferment if they come in contact with yeast, which can be found on the skin of other fruits, right? And you'll have a natural fermentation. But that natural fermentation does not lead to the alcohol levels that we're seeing in wines today. And so the commercial genetically modified yeast, is programmed to withstand a much higher alcohol environment, usually up to 20%. The other reason that these commercial yeast are used, as I mentioned earlier, is because you can make wine easily with less work and much higher volumes than a native yeast. And the third reason that these genetically modified lab-grown yeast are used is that they can be modified to have certain flavor profiles. What I mean by that is, let's say you grow a pretty crappy grape in Central California. Industrial farming, lots of chemicals, irrigation, you know, a pretty useless grape, right? Well, you want that grape to taste like it's from Italy. You want it to taste like it's a Mediterranean wine. They have a yeast for that, right? And so this is all the kind of doctoring that's going on in the background that people don't know about. Millions of people know about now because I've told them on podcasts like yours. But that, you know, this is kind of what's going on in the background of, as an example, we don't sell or drink any domestic wine, and no wines made in the United States that meet our strict standards of purity and health. And so all of our wines come from mostly across Europe, very small family farms. And then we have four family farms that grow for us in South Africa. But most of them are across Europe.
It's absolutely crazy what's going on in the wine industry, and it's very similar to what I think is going on in the food industry. Do you know, is this happening with other types of alcohol too? Like, is this the same thing with tequila and other liquors? I mean, I'm sure it's happening with beer. Do you have any idea?
I don't suspect that you find anything in distilled spirits like tequila, particularly if you're drinking a cult sort of. I don't think there are any additives in clear distilled clear liquor. Now brown liquors are different, right? I'm not an expert on spirits, and so I don't speak much about it because I don't know a lot about it. Mm-hmm. I do know if you're going to drink spirits, you should be drinking clear spirits, not brown spirits. So to that extent, that's about, I know there's sugars and can be additives in brown spirits that you don't find in distilled cleared spirits. That's about all I know about it.
Okay.
I'm also not an expert on beer because I don't drink it for the two reasons I've already described. And I don't have any real desire to have knowledge around it. So
understandable.
So when I am an expert on natural wine.
And I want to ask you more about it. When it comes to sugar, I mean, obviously there's still sugar content in even natural wine. There's natural sugar at some point. Or is yours, how low does the sugar content come in when it comes to dry farm wine? Because I know there's a lot of wines out there. If we're getting away from the additive side of things, let's just talk sugar. There's a lot of wines that are super high in sugar. What kind of content are you looking at with the dry farm wines versus what you're getting when you go to the market?
Well, we lab test every wine for a whole bunch of compounds and elements, including alcohol. The alcohol stated on a wine bottle by law is not required to be accurate. And the wine industry loves alcohol because alcohol impairs your judgment. It's a domino drug. The more you drink, the more you're likely to drink, the more they sell, right? And in addition to that, alcohol in wine leads to density and taste. And for people who have a deadened palate from years of abusing sugar and processed foods, they want a bigger, bolder, denser taste. And alcohol brings that to wine. But as to sugar can be zero, and sugar in wine is measured in grams per liter, and a liter is actually 1,000 milliliters. A standard wine bottle is 750 milliliters, so it's actually more than what is contained. A liter is more than what's contained in a standard wine bottle. This is how sugar is measured in wine. We lab test every wine. We reject 70% of the wines that we taste or test for various reasons. Oftentimes, that's because they contain sugar. So even though a wine is naturally produced, it can still contain sugar. And we would reject that wine based on a lab test. We do not allow more than 1 gram per liter, which at the glass level is statistically sugar-free, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you couldn't even measure it in a glass. You couldn't measure the amount of sugar in a glass if it's less than a gram per liter, mm-hmm. right? Most of the wines we sell are between 2/10 and 5/10 of a gram per liter, which is statistically wow. sugar-free, right? And so, again, we lab test every wine for sugar and a lot of other things because I'm not interested in drinking sugar. Now, in conventional wines, it's quite common that statistically, sugars in wine can range from, and this is a combination of glucose and fructose, and I'll explain to you how it becomes sugar-free or not in a moment. But sugar in wine can range from 0 to as high as 300 grams per liter. That's categorically. Now, Coca-Cola has about 32 grams per liter, right? So the most wines will range from 5 or 10 grams per liter up to about 50 grams per liter. And it's very common for commercial wines, like these box wines and whatnot, to have 20 to 25 grams per liter. That's fairly common. You can also get dry red wines that are also sugar-free, but not naturally or organic. And let me talk about, come back to sugar in a second. Let me talk about what natural wine means. Okay. When I say natural wine, that means that in our case, it's not irrigated. That means that it is farmed organically or biodynamically, that it is fermented with wild native yeast. And biodynamic farming, by the way, is a prescriptive advanced form of organic farming. And that is additive-free. That's what a natural wine is. But you can get sugar-free wines that are not natural or are not organic. It's a winemaking style, and it's also a process of allowing the fermentation to complete. So let's talk about winemaking for a second. How do you make wine? Well, you begin with grape juice, which is teeming with sugar, filled with sugar. Then you have yeast inoculates with that sugar. Now, that can be natural native yeast, as we talked about in natural wines, or it can be inoculated with this lab-grown yeast. Either way, yeast comes in contact with the sugar. If the temperature is high enough to activate the yeast, you know, you can't activate yeast at a cold temperature, which is why your grandmother always put her bread in the oven or above the refrigerator covered with a cloth, right? Because yeast won't activate until it reaches a certain temperature, right? And depends upon the yeast as to what temperature it has to set. But that being said, once the yeast activates, it will begin eating the sugar. That's how it feeds itself. And when it eats the sugar, the byproduct of that is carbon dioxide and ethyl alcohol. That's how wine is made. If the wine is allowed by the winemaker to complete the fermentation, the yeast will eat all of the available sugar, and then the yeast will die. And then you have a fully fermented sugar-free wine. Mm-hmm. Now, what's happening in commercial wines, because of winemaking styles, is that the winemaker is pouring sulfur dioxide into the fermenting juice to kill the yeast prematurely before they eat all the available sugar, leaving what's known as residual sugar behind in the wine. That's how sugar gets in wine. It's mm-hmm. intentional by the winemaker. It's a winemaking style and practice. And it's very common today in commercial wines. Might not surprise you that people around the globe, and particularly Americans, love sugar,
yeah.
right? So this is a winemaking style and practice. So what you see is that most conventional wines contain 5 to 25 grams. They can be higher, like in dessert wines or intentionally sweet wines or ice wines or late harvest wines. That's where you get up into this 100, 200 grams per liter. It tastes very sweet. You know it's got a lot of sugar in it. You can taste it. But for wines that have 10, 15, 20 grams of sugar, you might not taste that, right? Because the acid in wine hides the sugar, right? Just like when you make lemonade, right? You had to put a lot of sugar in there before it starts getting sweet, right? Because the acid hides the taste of the sugar. And so same thing in wine. Wine has a high acid in it. So that's let me talk about one other thing between while we're on winemaking, between red wine and white wine, because there's a big difference between red wine and white wine, not only in the way it tastes, but also its health benefits. Okay. So red wines contain just over 800 polyphenols, antioxidants, flavonoids, and non-flavonoids. Those are the health properties that are inside a red wine. The most famous one is called resveratrol. Now, white wines only contain about 200 polyphenols, and not the most healthy ones, because the additional polyphenols come in red wine from its contact with the skin. That's also how red wine gets its color. So if you squeeze the juice from a white wine grape and you squeeze the juice from a red wine grape, they're both going to be clear. Red wine gets its color and its additional polyphenols from contact with the skin and the seeds. So when you press a wine, when you press red wine, the juice comes out, it's clear. It goes into a tank, and then you put the skins from the press into the tank with the juice, and that's how it gets its color and its additional polyphenols.
Interesting.
Yeah, I had no idea. And you know, I've always wondered the differences between red and white wine. I'm a big red wine drinker myself, but I had no idea that it was they were both clear. That's really interesting. So thanks for sharing that. So, guys, I think we need to be aware. You know, if we're buying wine, you got to watch out for the sugar content, because a lot of them, it's going to be there. And is there even, I mean, other than you guys, which isn't in stores, you got to buy yours online and it gets delivered to your door, only in the US. If someone, I guess, is outside of the US, or, you know, they're just looking for another bottle of wine, is there even, I mean, the organic section, as you've mentioned already, isn't really going to give you much. What are they looking for then? Just looking for a low alcohol wine and, I mean, the labels aren't even accurate, are they?
Well, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. Again, it's a transparency issue. We don't know whether they're accurate or not unless we lab test them.
Yeah.
Right? And American winemakers typically mark lower the alcohol instead of rising it, because the higher the stated alcohol in the bottle, the more excise tax they pay to the federal government. So, you know, there's a lot of intricacies here. Here's the bottom line. If you want to drink wine and you want to drink the healthiest wine, you want to try to drink natural wine, right? So that's going to be pretty easy in places like New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, Dallas. If you're in a big marketplace in a sophisticated city, you'll find access, not much, but you'll find access to natural wines. The most natural wine in the United States is in New York, followed by Los Angeles and San Francisco, and then kind of scattered about. Since natural wines are very rare and difficult to get, they're hard to find. There is a smartphone app called Raisin that is dedicated to helping you find natural wine. So now, again, if you're drinking natural wine, you should then look for lower alcohol. When I say lower alcohol, I'm talking about 12.5% and below, right? And so you want to look for lower alcohol wines. Now, you're still not going to know if it's sugar-free, because there's no disclosure on the label as to its sugar content. And natural wines may have sugar in them. And we reject natural wines every day because they contain sugar. So the only way to know if you're a super fanatic like us, the only way to know if you're getting all natural, sugar-free, low alcohol wines is buy them from us. Mm-hmm. Other than that, then, and I'm not here to sell wine. And what I'm really trying to sell is education about how people think about wine and how they think about their relationship with alcohol. So I'm not here pitching dry farm wines. I'm here to help people learn how to think about drinking wine. And if you're in a place like Paris or London or Berlin or New York or you know, San Francisco or Los Angeles, you're going to have readily access to natural wine bars, restaurants, and a handful of retailers. You know, in San Francisco, there are two natural wine retailers, right? In a city that's known for natural wine. In Los Angeles, there are about five. In New York, there are about five, right? And so dedicated retailers to natural wine, right? And so now you'll find natural wines in restaurants, like farm-to-table restaurants or like hipster restaurants are going to have, you know, if you're on Abbot Kinney in Los Angeles, which is, you know, one of the most fabulous shopping and restaurant streets in the world, but super hipster, many of the restaurants along that strip are going to have natural wines on their bar, on their menu. They'll also have conventional wines as well. So you just have to ask. But if you're in a standard restaurant, they're not even going to know what natural wine is. Just because it's a sommelier doesn't mean that they know anything about natural wine, right? Just because they're a wine expert doesn't mean they know anything about natural wines, absolutely, right? Because there's such a small community, and it's typically pursued by people who are, like me, pretty fanatical about it. Like the natural wine revolution, you know, is a community of people who are deeply dedicated to this way of farming and these non-interventionalist methods of fermentation and making wine.
Absolutely. So I think, guys, for the listeners here, if you are in the U.S. and you want to drink good, natural, low alcohol wine, then just go to Dry Farm Wines. It's that easy. Dryfarmwines.com is how you get them. And they actually just deliver it right to your door. You guys have a bunch of different types of wines, or what's your stock like? Does it change based
on seasons? We deal with about 400 family farms around the world, none in the U.S., with, you know, over, you know, probably 2,000 SKUs, 2,000 different types of wine.
Wow. Right? Amazing.
And they turn all the time because you can't make natural wines in very big volume, right? So we're constantly every day shipping and receiving new wines.
Interesting. And what's amazing, Dry Farm Wines and Todd here have given any listeners here in this podcast the first bottle for, I think it's a penny. Is it a penny bottle?
Yeah, it's a penny bottle.
Penny bottle. Just go to dryfarmwines.com/healthsimple. I'll make sure to put it in the show notes so you can check it out there. But your first order, you're going to get a bottle for a penny. I've had this wine and it is actually amazing. It's way better than any other wine you're going to get. So I highly, highly recommend it. I'm from Canada, so it was a little tougher for me to get the wine to me in Toronto, but I found a way to make it work. Todd, is there any, we're going to wrap up here. I got sun coming in my eyes, so I got to get out of it.
It's killing me. Yeah, I hear you, brother. I hear you.
Is there any last words you want to give to these wine connoisseurs or those who are looking to stay keto and stay on their weight loss journey, but have some fun and drink a little bit of alcohol at the same time?
Just spread more love around the world. That's a simple formula. Meditate, spread more love, drink some healthy wine, you know, hang out with your friends. It's a great time. Thanks for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, Todd. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your information and love what you guys are doing with Dry Farm Wines. Keep that up. I think it's an amazing thing and it allows us all to enjoy what we love. So we really appreciate what you're doing. That's a wrap, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, you could do me a wonderful favor by taking a screenshot and sharing it with your friends on social media. Feel free to tag me at healthsimple_ and let me know your thoughts. And if you have any questions, feel free to shoot me a DM as well. I would love to hear from you. I hope you guys all have a wonderful day.